jasoncharles.net.
Deep talk, deep sounds.
This is the Carl Arrington Archive on jasoncharles.net.
This is Carl Arrington. The following are excerpts of my interviews with Joe Esposito and Pat Perry, two key members of Elvis Presley's inner circle who were known as the Memphis Mafia. Joe Esposito was his personal manager for 17 years, and Pat Perry, who of the nine Memphis Mafia main people, was the only girl. It was recorded in Los Angeles in December of 1984 for a special issue of People magazine in celebration of what would have been Elvis Presley's 50th birthday.
Elvis was always searching for something. He always searched for answers. Elvis was a very intelligent guy, okay? But there was a lot of answers he was trying to find out. Mm-hmm. He was very curious. He studied all religions, not just... He did. He studied the Mormons. He studied all the Indian beliefs, mm-hmm. all the Christian beliefs, the Jewish faith. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knew them all. I mean, he used to have... He had little emblems made up with the signs of with the cross and the Star of David mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. And he just, it's not that he went any one direction. I think he was just searching for what was he doing on this earth? I mean, he really thought he was really chosen, special. Why was he the one that could sing so good? And why does he do this to people? Why does his charisma, where did it come from? And he was just always searching.
He ever figured it out?
I don't think so. No, never figured out. No, he knew the Bible backwards, frontwards, and he broke down. He could interpret any different stories in his own way of thinking about certain stories in the Bible. Yeah. And he would say why this happened, and all the religions. And numerology was into, astrology. He was into all those areas that can't be answered, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, nobody can answer any of those questions.
But in terms of what his appeal to people was, I mean, I'm sure that he came to grips with the fact that it was, but did he ever figure out what it was about him that people liked?
No, he didn't.
And do you think that caused problems?
Well, I think it caused a lot of, why me, you know what I mean? Yeah. Why am I so different than this other guy?
Right.
I mean, I walk around, I have problems like anybody else does, I get sick, you know, I hurt just like anybody else does, but why? No, he never. He thought about it many times. Say, I just don't understand why it was me. You know.
Yeah. When you think of Elvis now in your mind's eye, what picture? I mean, how old do you picture the sort of classic Elvis as it appears in your mind?
Well, I picture. To me, I would like to. You know. To me, I think Elvis would have been like a Sinatra. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He aged gracefully, and Sinatra is just out there still singing and not working as hard as he would a long time ago. But, you know, I could have seen him then do that, but I don't think he himself was thinking that direction.
Yeah.
He, to himself, was seeing himself getting older. You know, thinking
did that scare him?
Yeah, definitely. I think he was, it was in those couple of years where he was having all his problems.
Yeah.
Was in those years.
Yeah.
Right after he turned 40.
Right.
And it bothered
him. Was that
a
crisis for him, 40th
birthday?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Was that?
Absolutely.
Did he have a party?
No, we had we always had a birthday party every year, but it bothered him. Yeah, he didn't like the idea of turning 40. He didn't talk that much about it, but I know it bothered him tremendously.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah. When you were with Elvis, how did it affect your personal life? I mean,
personal life, there was no personal life, okay? I got married when I was in 62, and I was married 12 years. No, I was married in 61, married 12 years. Got mm-hmm. divorced same time he did. It's tough. That's why I got divorced. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was definitely not her fault, but I was never home.
Yeah.
I was gone 220 days a year
on
the average.
Yeah.
I figured it out one time. And you can't have a wife, you know, and you can't take them with you.
Yeah.
We did have certain trips, but after a while, you just can't. You just cannot take the family along. And it's in our business and that business with Elvis, nobody had a personal life. We didn't have one. It was all business.
Mm-hmm.
Personal as far as we all did our own thing together with him. We all went on vacations and took our wives and our kids sometimes and went on vacations together. We did everything together all the time for all those years I was with him. All the time. So there was no personal life.
So would it, in retrospect, What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it wasn't good. It wasn't healthy, you know. But it's an experience that, you know, it's a very unusual experience, you know. I mean, I have regrets about a lot of things, but I don't know. I probably wouldn't have traded it off for anything.
Yeah.
No. It's once in a lifetime.
In the dissolution of the estate, or the settlement of the estate, I should say, how, what role did you play other than kind of organizing things? And
well, as far as the settlement of the estate was, you know, I coordinated with all the lawyers about where everything was, because Elvis had stuff in his house, Palm Springs, stuff out here in storage, at Graceland. He had things everywhere. In Vegas, we had stuff. Mm. So a lot of stuff I only knew where it was at. I'm the only one that knew where it was all at, so I worked with them and taking all these lawyers and what are they called, the people that estimate the value of all the stuff, whatever they are, auditors or whatever they are. They would go with me and I'd show them all the stuff and we'd write down everything. And Elvis had so much stuff all over the United States, is unbelievable, that we had to organize so they could decide on what the tax was and who owned what.
What among all those things do you remember that he owned that you just said, I can't believe he owns this? I mean, was there 20 Cadillacs or
Well, I mean, I knew everything he owned. It was just there wasn't nothing unusual to me, because to me that was ordinary.
But it was just the mass of
amount of stuff. Yeah. You know, like furniture from houses we had in storage here. We were just sitting there paying $1,000 a month just for storage, and furniture would never ever be used. You know?
Yeah.
And we got, you know, it was just so much stuff. The ranch in Mississippi. It was just so much stuff. I mean, like, we had a house trailer. Not a house trailer. It was a trailer. It was a dressing room trailer on the studio here, okay? And after he stopped making movies in 69, it sat on that studio. I think it was MGM or Paramount. I forgot what studio it was. We left it there. Now, this was a big dressing room trailer with a bedroom, a big trailer.
Uh-huh.
And we just let it rot away. Now, this was a trailer we had custom built for him, but in 69, we never used it after 69, after his last feature.
Uh-huh.
And it just rotted away. And I went to look at it one lot one day to see what happened to it. It was a shambles. People broke into it and stole everything out of it. You know, but I'm just saying, here's something we forgot about. It was worth quite a bit of money. We just forgot about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there was things like that. Like, we had some snowmobiles up in Denver, Colorado. We bought one time. We went skiing and snowmobiling. Just left them there.
Yeah.
Three of them.
Do you ever look back and just sort of shake your head or pinch yourself that you did all the things that you did, and I mean, that must have been a high life for 18 years.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why it was a rough life. Don't get me wrong, but it's also, you can't compare it to something else. I mean, because there is no comparisons. What we did, you know, I mean, the way we lived, and, you know, jet planes here. I mean, let's fly over here. Let's go do this. We bought one plane to go look at another plane. Now, that's the truth. That's true. We built the Lisa Marie. We bought it and we put it down in Fort Worth, Texas, okay? While I was working on it. Elvis bought another jet to fly from Memphis to Fort Worth to go look at his plane, to check his plane. We bought a small one to go back and forth to look at it. I mean, you know.
It's extraordinary.
You know what I tell you? That's just the way he was.
Yeah.
It's for what the kind of life we led, you know, that would be 110, 120 to live our life with that.
Yeah.
That's 20 years.
Yeah. But what did you think of, in retrospect, looking back on Elvis and what happened to him in the last couple of years, what would you have done different, or would you have done anything different? Do you think it was sort of an inevitable tragedy, or... I mean, as you think back.
Well, I mean, there's no two ways about it. Naturally, after something happens like this, you can say, if I would only done this or done. I mean, we all the guys around us thought the same thing after it was over. You know, if we could only, grab Elvis and say, you know, shook him and say, Elvis, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing to yourself? You know, you got so much to live forward to.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, everybody did try to talk to Elvis about a lot of situations about, hey, Elvis, you know, got to get yourself in shape again, you know. You can't go on being depressed or not feeling good. You know, you got to do something about it. But, you know, he was 42 years old. I mean, 40 years old, you can't tell the man what to do. If you don't like it, he said, there was no strings attached to his job. You know, you walk out the door. And because a lot of people say to you, why didn't you guys do something? You saw what was happening. We all tried, but yet I wasn't going to desert him. There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, he was just too good to me. And I had no regrets as far as that goes. You know, I think I could have walked away and said, Elvis, if you don't want to shape up, I'm leaving. And it may have affected him for a while, but Elvis was so stubborn that he would never admit that he was wrong. He apologized in strange ways when he did do something wrong. Never really apologized. He was real nice to you for a long time.
Would he buy you?
He'd buy you something, you know what I mean, to make you feel better. But he would never say he's sorry. Because I don't know what it was. Maybe it was his upbringing. I don't know. Maybe because he was treated so bad all his life from other kids, from other people. Mm-hmm. He was so much of a loner that he just felt he shouldn't have to apologize. I don't know. That part, I don't know. He was very quiet about certain things.
Yeah. That's amazing.
If Elvis was alive today, what do you think he would have been like?
You know, I think about that a lot. I don't know, you know. I don't know if he could have grown old gracefully. Seeing how he became, you know, it's real hard. I would hope that he would be like a Sinatra that would kept going.
Right.
And I think that he would have had as many fans as he had then.
Right.
And hopefully if he would have kept his life together, he could have become a better actor.
Mm-hmm.
And still had enough, he had talent that never would quit. And he
right.
had fans today when he's dead 8 years that
right.
still love him.
Right.
And the children of those fans still love him. I mean, they're young kids that still know Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
So I think he could have been as big an idol today as he was then.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows personally, you know, his lifestyle and the way we lived. I don't know if he could have dealt with it. You know, you can't live shut up in a prison for 20, 40, 50 years, you know.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't go anywhere. We never went anywhere, hardly.
Yeah. But you say you went out and cruised around.
We'd cruise around, we'd do that, and we'd go Palm Springs and Las Vegas, and we'd go to Memphis, or we'd go to Hawaii. But he pretty much was in the house.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't get out a lot. Until when he'd get spurts, you know, he'd decide to do something, mm-hmm. we'd all go. Yeah. Or we'd go to the jewelry store. Or we'd go to Thrifty's, you know. He'd buy all these little crazy little gimmicks. He was incredible. He had a weird way about him that he loved all the little tchotchkes, you know. And if he'd find something he loved, he'd do it to the hilt. You know?
Mm.
We'd go to movies a lot late at night. You know, we'd rent theaters and go late at night.
Mm.
Have the whole theater to ourselves. We'd go about 1 in the morning after it was closed.
This is like the pre-videotape days.
Oh, yeah, so this was pre-video. He'd have a machine, a movie machine. He'd show football games and stuff like that in the house.
Mm.
I mean, he was a football fan.
Mm.
But we'd do a lot of TV, a lot of television.
Mm.
You know? I mean, there have been times there were 3 televisions going at once, you know, to watch. He loved that. But whatever he did to the hill.
What were his favorite shows?
Mostly football. He loved football.
Hmm.
He watched all the football games. Loved the Little Rascals. He used to be hysterical over Little Rascals. He liked movies. You know, mm-hmm. Patton. I'll tell you a story about Patton. We went to see Patton, and he fell in love with the character. Learned the whole first soliloquy, by heart. And he says, Omar Bradley lives in Los Angeles. We got in the car. We drove over, we found out where he lived in Truesdale Estates, and we drove over to Omar Bradley's house, knocked on the door, walked in and sat 3 hours in his study with the five-star general, and talked to him about Patton. We went there twice. And when he had an idea to do something, he did it. He wanted to meet the president. No, we didn't go. Jerry Schilling went and Sonny. He got on a plane, went to the White House, knocked on the door. This is how, when he wanted to do something, he did it.
Yeah.
But he'd do everything to the hill. If he liked a record, we'd play it over and over until he'd get sick of it.
Hmm.
But movies, you know, movies. Patton, he loved that movie. Doctor Strange.
How many times do you think
he saw it? Oh, innumerable. But he could recite the whole beginning. He was very impressed by things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he really got into, he got into. He was into the self-realization religion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Elvis was very spiritual, and he taught us a lot of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
He loved the Jewish religion. First time, I'll tell you a story. He took when first time I went to Memphis, he took me on a tour. Of where his schools and where he lived and how he grew up, and he mm-hmm. took me to his mother's grave,
mm.
and he's got a Jewish star and a cross. I says, "What are you doing with a Jewish star?"
Mm-hmm.
He wore a Jewish star and a cross. He says, "I'm not going to get shut out of heaven on a technicality."
Mm.
This is the kind of mind he had. Mm. He was such a trip. He wanted everything, you know.
Mm.
He covered all limits. He says, "I got Jewish friends. I got this." He learned all about Jewish religion. He was a self-taught man. He read always. He was always reading things. Because he was not real educated, but he was a self-taught, and he became a very educated man, very
yeah.
sensitive man.
Yeah. Was he analytical, or did he just sort of gather information?
He was very, you know, he used to give sermons, you know. I mean, he learned from books.
Yeah.
And so he'd like read something. He read them and
he lectured everybody. Yeah, he loved. But he teaches what he learned, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was really into it because he loved the knowledge. He loved knowledge. He was an incredible human being because we're talking about a 19-year-old boy that really was self-taught. He learned about things that he never experienced, that I never even knew about.
Yeah.
You know? And he wanted all of us to share. Whatever he knew, he made us aware of. The same as whatever he had, we all got to share it. When he went shopping, we all went shopping. When we went to a jewelry store, everybody got something. You know, he never bought himself without buying us. He bought a car, we all got a car. He was wonderful. You're thinking about a 19-year-old truck driver who becomes a superstar out of nowhere. Yeah. He wasn't sophisticated. He wasn't, you know. He didn't know. He wasn't worldly. Mm-hmm. And here he's thrown into this mass of things. But he was just a regular, nice kid.
Yeah.
Not kid, you know. But he was always a kid. He was like a little kid. He was so funny. He had an incredible wit.
That's something that... I mean, you see sort of snatches of it here and there in little interviews and things like that, but... From what I can gather from what people say, he was a real clown. I mean, he had a good self-deprecating sense of humor. Didn't take himself too seriously.
He had a wildest sense of humor. He would come off the wall. He had a very quick, dry humor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd pull things out that you'd die laughing, you know. Mm-hmm. But when he was comfortable, mm-hmm. when he could be himself, he could let go. He was very funny.
I mean, are these like practical jokes or just like...
Not necessarily practical jokes. He'd just come up with little innuendos or little sayings, you know, that he'd pull out, you know.
Uh-huh.
Silly things. Mm-hmm. He was silly. You know, he was real silly. They called him Crazy. That was his nickname.
Really?
Yeah, he bought everybody bracelets, you know, and all their nicknames. You know, Joe Esposito was Jaws, cause, you know. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And Alan Fortis was Hog Fortis. And and Elvis's was Crazy. You know?
Huh. What was yours?
Oh, I didn't have a nickname. He wouldn't dare give me a nickname. I'd kill him. he never called me Pat. He never called me Pat. He always called me Patricia.
Really?
And then made always call me Patricia. So the only person ever called me Patricia.
Did you ever like pinch or something? Why me? I mean, well, I mean, I think Elvis must have spent a lot of his time saying why me. But did you ever say why me?
I knew why me.
Yeah.
Because I never took from him. I never asked anything from him, and I was honest with him. Mm. Because I worked real hard, and I didn't. He wanted to put me on payroll so many times, and I refused. Well, when I finally went on payroll, he says, "How much do you want?" And I gave him this real low figure. He says, "No, I can't give you that." He says, and he gives me this phenomenal amount. This is I'm 18 years old, you know.
Mm.
That's times $100 a week. This was when Priscilla came and he asked me to comb her hair every day.
Mm.
And I freaked me out, you know. But and I would never I wouldn't take when first time I cut his hair after I was a hairdresser for a while, and then I was cutting guys' hair.
Mm.
And I was cutting the guy's hair, and he didn't want to miss out on anything. Elvis never liked to miss out on anything. When everybody got anything he wanted to be, he says, "Come on, cut my hair." He gives me $750. Fuck you, give him the money back. I said, "Elvis, you know, I eat here. I travel with you. I don't want your money." Mm. Well, I think that's what made him like me, you know, because he knew I was there because I cared about him.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for what I can get. Yeah, he gave me beautiful things that I could never have. He bought me my car.
Mm-hmm.
He bought me jewelry. He bought me my first fur coat.
Mm.
But those were gifts. He conned me. My first fur coat, I finally, 15 years I was with him, and I never had anybody that I was going with.
Mm-hmm.
And my boyfriend, I finally told Elvis I had met someone I really cared for.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Bring him over." No, first I was moving in with the guy, mm-hmm. and he called me. He said, "You got to come cut my hair." I said, "Elvis, I just cut your hair." He says, you got to come over."
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving that day. He calls me up to the house. I run up to the house because I never turn him down.
Mm-hmm.
He hands me a mink coat. You know, he just, because he didn't want to lose touch, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He was real scared of losing touch with his friends. It was a trip. He really was.
It is.
And he used to play. He was just a sensitive man.
Mm.
And there were very few people that he really trusted or cared about, and he wanted you around, you know.
Yeah.
And he always, and if whether it was 24 hours, you know, I mean, I'd say, "Elvis, I gotta go home." He'd call me, "You gotta come cut my hair. This is 8 o'clock at night." 3 in the morning, I says, "Elvis, come on, I gotta go to work." "Just wait another hour," you know. He wanted everybody close around him.
Yeah. If you were working, I mean, he was notoriously nocturnal. I mean,
believe me, it was tough.
You'd sort of like
I'd work it around him, you know. But I'd have to leave. He said, "Don't leave," you know. Or I'd sleep there. Yeah. You don't go to work.
Yeah.
No, but you know, he just didn't want you to go.
Yeah.
You know, because he only had a few people.
What about when he was in Graceland? Did you ever did you travel much there, or was it mostly when he was around?
I used to go to Graceland. He'd go to visit. You know, he'd bring me back. See, I worked like three, four days a week those days. You know, those are the good old days. And then I'd work 4 days, and I'd split and go wherever he was.
Yeah.
And I'd come back and do my little work, and then go wherever they were.
Hmm.
So I had a great life. You know, I didn't want to date. I didn't want to do anything. I was living the life. I was living an extraordinary life.
Yeah.
It was exciting. But it was boring, too. You know, we'd sit in the house, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But you felt the need that he needed his friends around him, because there were so few.
Was there a real routine when you were around him? That is, you got up and did this, and you ate
Well,
this,
when
we
were in Las Vegas, you go to Las Vegas for a month. We would get up, he'd get up about 4 in the afternoon, have breakfast, get it together, we'd go down to the dressing room, he'd get dressed, we'd see the show, we'd go back to the dressing room, greet guests, and we'd go back to the suite. And this was every day. This is the
and
whole...
watch TV or
watch
do...
television or hang out. This is, I mean, can you think of doing this for a month? We'd go from the suite to the show, to the suite, to the show, to the suite, to the show.
That's all?
That's it. And once in a while, after it was over, we'd go to a few shows, but we'd sneak in after the show started, because he'd cause a riot, you know?
Yeah.
He couldn't go... One time he went into the casino, and people created such a problem, they asked him not to come down.
Yeah.
So we didn't go down to the casino. So we all used to get to go to the casino and play, but he'd be in the room, you know.
Was there ever anything Elvis really wanted to do that he couldn't do?
Oh, I think there were a lot of things. I think Elvis would have loved to have gone to Disneyland, you know, and just be a normal person and go out and anything that anybody, go shopping. when we went to Hawaii, we all went to the beach. He sat in the room, you know.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go to the jewelry store. He'd go in there with a flashlight after it was closed. Because this one we went to do that special, that satellite special.
Right, right.
It was fabulous. But he really couldn't go a lot of places, unfortunately.
How about big things? I mean, people that he wanted to meet that for whatever.
Everybody he wanted to meet, he met, I think.
Uh-huh.
You know, the people that used to come backstage. I mean, the biggest stars.
Uh-huh.
You know, Cary Grant. I mean, that Cary Grant impressed him so incredibly.
Right.
You know, he was thrilled. I mean, these are legends.
Right, right.
And the Beatles came to visit him, you know, and they're all sitting around the living room staring at him. He said, either we talk or we play music or I don't want to do this, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And they loved, I mean, they all, he was the big daddy, you know.
Yeah.
So he had to carry a pretty heavy weight on his shoulders.
Yeah.
He always had to look good and be together. That's a hard way to go, you know.
Yeah. What do you think started his...
His
downfall. I mean,
okay. What I remember, Elvis was very hyper. I mean, you sit in a chair, Elvis was always like this. You know, his leg was, he had a habit, he always shook his leg. You know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, he couldn't sit still because he had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
But understandably, he was a young man with all this energy and couldn't use it because he couldn't go out and run around the streets.
Mm-hmm.
He used to have football games up in Coldwater Canyon. We used to have a football game. And it became...
football?
He used to play touch football. He used to play with a guy, a bunch of young actors used to come in. Elvis had his team with his guys, and then they'd play football. And they asked us not to do it anymore because there were so many spectators that was crowding up the area.
Hmm.
Then we got into a motorcycle thing, and they bought everybody a motorcycle. And we used to drive through Bel Air. Then they asked us not to do that because it was creating too much noise.
Hmm.
So everything he did that he liked created a problem because people would follow. You know, you couldn't go out of the house without 5 cars following you.
Hmm.
There was never less than 30, 40, 50 people outside the gate here on, from Perugia Road to Bellagio to Montville, where we last lived.
Mm.
I mean, there was always people outside.
Yeah.
And it always, everywhere we went, there was 15 cars, you know, so it was very difficult.
Yeah.
Created a problem.
Yeah.
And he was always very nice to his fans, you know.
Yeah.
He always said, they made me, and I'm always going to appreciate that.
Yeah.
And he would always say hello, and he was always very, very nice to his fans, you know. And he always made sure that we were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he said, without them, I'd be nothing, which
was
a very nice touch, and I respected that.
You've been listening to excerpts of my interviews with members of Elvis Presley's Memphis Mafia, Joe Esposito and Pat Perry, recorded in December of 1984 in Los Angeles. This is Carl Arrington. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Carl Arrington Archive on jasoncharles.net. The Carl Arrington Archive is a collection of hundreds of hours of rare, in-depth interviews with the greatest musicians, performing artists, and writers, conducted over four decades by veteran journalist Carl Arrington. For more information about the series and upcoming episodes, go to the Carl Arrington Archive on the jasoncharles.net podcast network audio dramas channel. Follow us on Instagram at Carl Arrington Archive and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information regarding licensing and full extended interviews, contact Carl Arrington Archive at gmail.com.
JasonCharles.net.
Deep talk, deep sounds.
That was so deep.
Very, very deep.